Chapter 2. Ah, it's pleasant to drop into my own easy chair, my dear, though a little palpitating what with trotting upstairs, and what with trotting down, and why kitchen stairs should all be corner stairs is for the builders to justify, though I do not think they fully understand their trade and never did, else why the sameness, and why not more conveniences and fewer drafts and likewise making a practice of laying the plaster on too thick I am well convinced which holds the damp, and as to chimney pots putting them on by guesswork like cats at a party, and no more knowing what their effect will be upon the smoke bless you than I do if so much. Except that it will mostly be either to send it down your throat in a straight form, or give it a twist before it goes there. And what I says speaking as I find of those new metal chimneys all manner of shapes, there's a row of them at Miss Wozenham's lodging house lower down on the other side of the way, is that they only work your smoke into artificial patterns for you before you swallow it, and that I'd quite as soon swallow mine plain, the flavor being the same, not to mention the conceit of putting up signs on the top of your house, to show the forms in which you take your smoke into your inside. Being here before your eyes, my dear, in my own easy chair, in my own quiet room, in my own lodging house, number 81 Norfolk Street, Strand, London, situated midway between the city and St. James, if anything is where it used to be with these hotels calling themselves limited, but called unlimited by Major Jackman rising up everywhere, and rising up into flagstaffs, where they can't go any higher, but my mind of those monsters, is give me a landlord's or landlady's wholesome face, when I come off a journey, and not a brass plate with an electrified number clicking out of it which it's not in nature can be glad to see me and. To which I don't want to be hoisted like molasses at the docks, and left there telegraphing for help with the most ingenious instruments, but quite in vain being here my dear I have no call to mention, that I am still in the lodgings as a business hoping, to die in the same, and if agreeable to the clergy partly read over at St. Clement Staines and concluded in Hatfield Churchyard, when lying once again by my poor Lurper ashes to ashes and dust to dust. Neither should I tell you any news, my dear, in telling you, that the Major is still a fixture in the parlors quite as much so as the roof of the house, and that Jemmy is of boys the best and brightest, and has ever had kept from him the cruel story of his poor pretty young mother Mrs. Etson being deserted in the second floor and dying in my arms, fully believing that I am his born gran and him an orphan, though what with engineering, since he took a taste for it and him, and the Major making locomotives out of parasols broken iron pots, and cotton reels and them absolutely a getting off the line, and falling over the table and injuring the passengers almost equal to the originals it really is quite wonderful. And when I says to the Major, Major can't you by any means, give us a communication with the guard, the Major says quite huffy, no madam it's not to be done, and when I says, why not, the Major says, that is between us who are in the railway interest madam, and our friend the Right Honorable Vice President of the Board of Trade, and if you'll believe me my dear the Major wrote to Jemmy at school, to consult him on the answer I should have, before I could get, even that amount of unsatisfactoriness out of the man, the reason being that, when we first began with the little model, and the working signals beautiful and perfect, being in general as wrong as the real, and when I says laughing, what appointment am I to hold in this undertaking, gentlemen? Jemmy hugs me round the neck, and tells me dancing, you shall be the public gran, and consequently they put upon me just as much as ever they like, and I sit a growling in my easy chair. My dear, whether it is that a grown man as clever as the Major cannot give half his heart and mind to anything even a plaything, but must get into right down earnest with it, whether it is so, or whether it is not so I do not undertake to say, but Jemmy is far outdone by the serious and believing ways of the Major in the management of the United Grand Junction Lurper and Jackman Great Norfolk Parlor line, for says my Jemmy with the sparkling eyes when it was christened, we must have a whole mouthful of name gran, or our dear old public and there the young rogue kiss me, won't stump up. So the public took the shares 10 at 9 pence, and immediately when that was spent 12 preference at 1 and 6 pence, and they were all signed by Jemmy and countersigned by the major, and between ourselves much better worth the money than some shares I have paid for in my time. In the same holidays the line was made and worked and opened, and ran excursions, and had collisions and burst at spoilers, and all sorts of accidents and offenses almost regular, correct and pretty. The sense of responsibility entertained by the major as a military style of station master, my dear, starting the down train behind time, and ringing one of those little bells that you buy with the little coal scuttles off the tray round the man's neck in the street, did him honor. But noticing the major of a night, when he is writing out his monthly report to Jemmy at school of the state of the rolling stock, and the permanent way and all the rest of it, the whole kept upon the major's sideboard, and dusted with his own hands every morning, before varnishing his boots, I notice him as full of thought and care as full can be, and frowning in a fearful manner. But indeed the major does nothing by halves, as witness his great delight in going out surveying with Jemmy, when he has Jemmy to go with, carrying a chain and a measuring tape, and driving I don't know what improvements right through Westminster Abbey, and fully believed in the streets to be knocking everything upside down by Act of Parliament. As please heaven will come to pass when Jemmy takes to that as a profession. Mentioning my poor lurper brings into my head his own youngest brother the doctor, though doctor of what I am sure it would be hard to say unless liquor, for neither physic nor music, nor yet law does Joshua Lurper know a morsel of except continually being summoned to the county court, and having orders made upon him which he runs away from, and once was taken in the passage of this very house with an umbrella up and the major's hat on, giving his name with the doormat round him as Sir Johnson Jones, K.C., be in spectacles residing at the Horse Guards, on which occasion he had got into the house not a minute before, through the girl letting him on the mat, when he sent in a piece of paper twisted more like one of those spills for lighting candles than a note, offering me the choice between 30 shillings in hand, and his brains on the premises marked immediate and waiting for an answer. My dear, it gave me such a dreadful turn to think of the brains of my poor dear lurper's own flesh and blood flying about the new oilcloth, however unworthy to be so assisted, that I went out of my room here to ask him what he would take once for all not to do it for life, when I found him in the custody of two gentlemen that I should have judged to be in the feather bed trade, if they had not announced the law, so fluffy were their personal appearance. Bring your chains, sir, says Joshua to the littlest of the two, in the biggest hat, rivet on my fetters. Imagine my feelings when I pictured him clanking up Norfolk Street in irons and Miss Wozenham looking out of window. Gentlemen, I says, all of a tremble and ready to drop, please, to bring him into Major Jackman's apartments. So they brought him into the parlors, and when the major spies his own curly-brimmed hat on him which Joshua Lurper had whipped off its peg in the passage for a military disguise, he goes into such a tearing passion that he tips it off his head with his hand, and kicks it up to the ceiling with his foot, where it grazed long afterwards. Major, I says, be cool and advise me what to do with Joshua my dead and gone Lurper's own youngest brother. Madam, says the major, my advice is that you board and lodge him in a powder mill, with a handsome gratuity to the proprietor when exploded. Major, I says, as a Christian you cannot mean your words. Madam, says the major, by the Lord I do, and indeed the major, besides being with all his merits a very passionate man for his size, had a bad opinion of Joshua on account of former troubles even unattended by liberties taken with his apparel. When Joshua Lurper hears this conversation betwixt us, he turns upon the littlest one with the biggest hat, and says, come, sir, remove me to my vile dungeon. Where is my moldy straw? My dear, at the picture of him rising in my mind dressed almost entirely in padlocks like Baron Trenck in Jemmy's book, I was so overcome that I burst into tears, and I says to the major, Major, take my keys and settle with these gentlemen or I shall never know a happy minute more, which was done several times both before and since, But still I must remember that Joshua Lerper has his good feelings, and shows them in being always so troubled in his mind, when he cannot wear mourning for his brother. Many a long year have I left off my widow's mourning not being wishful to intrude. But the tender point in Joshua, that I cannot help a little yielding to is when he writes one single sovereign would enable me to wear a decent suit of mourning for my much-loved brother. I vowed at the time of his lamented death, that I would ever wear sables in memory of him, but alas how short-sighted is man, how keep that vow and penniless. It says a good deal for the strength of his feelings, that he couldn't have been 7 years old, when my poor Lerper died, and to have kept to it ever since is highly creditable. But we know there's good in all of us, if we only knew where it was in some of us, and though it was far from delicate in Joshua, to work upon the dear child's feelings, when first sent to school and right down into Lincolnshire for his pocket money by return of post and got it, still he is my poor Lerper's own youngest brother, and mightn't have meant not paying his bill at the Salisbury Arms, when his affection took him down to stay a fortnight at Hatfield Churchyard, and might have meant to keep sober, but for bad company. Consequently, if the major had played on him with the garden engine which he got privately into his room without my knowing of it, I think that much as I should have regretted it there would have been words betwixt the major and me. Therefore, my dear, though he played on Mr. Buffle by mistake, being hot in his head, and though it might have been misrepresented down at Wozenham's into not being ready for Mr. Buffle in other respects he being the assessed taxes, still I do, not so much regret it as perhaps I ought. And whether Joshua Lerper will yet do well in life I cannot say, but I did hear of his coming out at a private theater in the character of a bandit without receiving any offers afterwards from the regular managers. Mentioning Mr. Baffle gives an instance of there being good in persons, where good is not expected, for it cannot be denied that Mr. Buffle's manners, when engaged in his business, were not agreeable. To collect is one thing, and to look about, as if suspicious of the goods, being gradually removing in the dead of the night by a back door is another, overtaxing you have no control, but suspecting is voluntary. Allowances too must ever be made for a gentleman of the major's warmth not relishing being spoke to with a pen in the mouth, and while I do not know that it is more irritable to my own feelings, to have a low-crowned hat with a broad brim kept on indoors than any other hat still I can appreciate the major's, besides which without bearing malice or vengeance the major is a man that scores up arrears as his habit always was with Joshua Lerper. So at last my dear the major lay in wait for Mr. Buffle, and it worried me a good deal. Mr. Buffle gives his rap of two sharp knocks one day, and the major bounces to the door. Collector has called for 2 quarters assessed taxes, says Mr. Buffle. They are ready for him, says the major, and brings him in here. But on the way Mr. Buffle looks about him in his usual suspicious manner, and the major fires, and asks him, do you see a ghost, sir? No, sir, says Mr. Buffle. Because I have before noticed you, says the major, apparently looking for a specter very hard beneath the roof of my respected friend. When you find that supernatural agent, be so good as point him out, sir. Mr. Buffle stares at the major, and then nods at me. Mrs. Lerper, sir, says the major, going off into a perfect steam and introducing me with his hand. Pleasure of knowing her, says Mr. Buffle. Jemmy Jackman, sir, says the major, introducing himself. Honor of knowing you by sight, says Mr. Buffle. Jemmy Jackman, sir, says the major, wagging his head sideways in a sort of obstinate fury, presents to you his esteemed friend, that lady Mrs. Emma Lerper of 81 Norfolk Street, Strand, London, in the county of Middlesex, in the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland. Upon which occasion, sir, says the major, Jemmy Jackman takes your hat off. Mr. Buffle looks at his hat, where the major drops it on the floor, and he picks it up, and puts it on again. Sir, says the major, very red, and looking him full in the face, there are 2 quarters of the gallantry taxes due and the collector has called. Upon which, if you can believe my words, my dear, the major drops Mr. Buffle's hat off again. this, Mr. Buffle begins very angry with his pen in his mouth, when the major steaming more and more says, "Take your bit out, sir, or by the whole infernal system of taxation of this country, and every individual figure in the national debt, I'll get upon your back, and ride you like a horse." Which it's my belief he would have done, and even actually jerking his neat little legs ready for a spring as it was. "This," says Mr. Buffle without his pen, "is an assault, and I'll have the law of you." "Sir," replies the major, "if you are a man of honor, your collector of whatever may be due on the honorable assessment, by applying to Major Jackman at the parlors Mrs. Lurper's lodgings, may obtain what he wants in full at any moment." When the major glared at Mr. Buffle with those meaning words, my dear, I literally gasped for a spoonful of sal volatile in a wine glass of water, and I says, "Pray let it go no farther, gentlemen, I beg, and beseech of you." But the major could be got to do nothing else but snort long after Mr. Buffle was gone, and the effect it had upon my whole mass of blood, when on the next day of Mr. Buffle's rounds the major spruced himself up, and went humming a tune up and down the street with one eye almost obliterated by his hat. There are not expressions in Johnson's dictionary to state. But I safely put the street door on the jar, and got behind the major's blinds with my shawl on, and my mind made up the moment I saw danger, to rush out screeching till my voice failed me, and catch the major round the neck till my strength went, and have all parties bound. I had not been behind the blinds a quarter of an hour, when I saw Mr. Buffle approaching with his collecting books in his hand. The major likewise saw him approaching, and hummed louder and himself approached. They met before the airy railings. The major takes off his hat at arm's length, and says, "Mr. Buffle, I believe?" Mr. Buffle takes off his hat at arm's length, and says, "That is my name, sir." Says the major, "Have you any commands for me, Mr. Buffle?" Says Mr. Buffle, "Not any, sir." Then my dear, both of 'em bowed very low, and haughty, and parted, and whenever Mr. Buffle made his rounds in future him, and the major always met and bowed before the airy railings, putting me much in mind of Hamlet, and the other gentlemen in mourning, before killing one another, though I could have wished the other gentlemen had done it fairer, and even if less polite, no poison. Mr. Buffle's family were not liked in this neighborhood. For when you are a householder, my dear, you'll find it does not come by nature to like the assessed, and it was considered besides, that a one-horse phaeton ought not to have elevated Mrs. Buffle to that height, especially when purloined from the taxes, which I myself did consider uncharitable. But they were not liked, and there was that domestic unhappiness in the family in consequence of their both being very hard with Miss Buffle and one another on account of Miss Buffle's favoring Mr. Buffle's articled young gentleman, that it was whispered that Miss Buffle would go either into a consumption or a convent, she being so very thin, and off her appetite, and two close-shaved gentlemen with white bands round their necks peeping round the corner whenever she went out in waistcoats resembling black pinafores. So things stood towards Mr. Buffle, when one night I was woke by a frightful noise and a smell of burning, and going to my bedroom window saw the whole street in a glow. Fortunately, we had two sets empty just then, and before I could hurry on some clothes, I heard the major hammering at the attic doors and calling out, "Dress yourselves! Fire! Don't be frightened! Fire! Collect your presence of mind! Fire! All right, fire! Most tremendously!" As I opened my bedroom door, the major came tumbling in over himself and me, and caught me in his arms. "Major," I says, breathless, "where is it?" "I don't know, dearest madam," says the major. "Fire. Jemmy Jackman will defend you to the last drop of his blood. Fire. If the dear boy was at home, what a treat this would be for him. Fire." And altogether very collected and bold, except that he couldn't say a single sentence without shaking me to the very center with roaring fire. We ran down to the drawing room, and put our heads out of window, and the major calls to an unfeeling young monkey, scampering by, "Be joyful and ready to split. Where is it? Fire." The monkey answers without stopping, "Oh, here's a lark. Old Buffalo's been setting his house alight to prevent its being found out that he boned the taxes. Hurrah! Fire! And then the sparks came flying up, and the smoke came pouring down, and the crackling of flames and spatting of water and banging of engines and hacking of axes and breaking of glass and knocking at doors, and the shouting and crying and hurrying, and the heat and altogether gave me a dreadful palpitation. Don't be frightened, dearest madam, says the major, fire. There's nothing to be alarmed at, fire. Don't open the street door till I come back, fire. I'll go and see if I can be of any service, fire. You're quite composed and comfortable, ain't? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.